This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. What are the costs and benefits of the Iran nuclear deal so far? Will Donald Trump, as promised, rip up the deal in pursuit of a presently non-existent better deal? Ariane Tabatabai is author of the new Cato paper, Preserving the Iran Nuclear Deal, Perils and Prospects. We spoke earlier this month.
What were the successes of the Iran deal?
Well, from a technical perspective, the deal rolls back a number of key elements and very sensitive elements of the Iranian nuclear program. And those elements are usually used to develop a nuclear weapon. If a country wants to pursue a nuclear weapon, it has to go down one of two paths, essentially. The first one is uranium enrichment. And on that, the nuclear deal has place a number of limitations for Iran, which means that Iran can enrich some uranium, but it can only enrich it to up to a certain level, and it can only do it using a number of centrifuges, which means that it can't really, for the foreseeable future, develop a nuclear weapon using enriched uranium. The second path is the plutonium path, and that has been essentially stopped by the nuclear deal. The third thing that a country can do, though, is to procure a nuclear weapon, to go and purchase it from somewhere else, to steal it from another country, for example. And on that, too, the nuclear deal does a fair bit. It essentially places inspections and very robust monitoring on the country's nuclear program to make sure that Iran continues to use its nuclear technology for civilian purposes, but that it does not develop a nuclear weapon.
So why are we told that it's a bad deal?
Well, because it has a number of shortcomings. And I think critics are right to point those out. One is that it does not stop Iran from building and testing ballistic missiles. And that's, of course, a key challenge for the United States and for U.S. partners and allies in the region, particularly Israel and Saudi Arabia. Second, the deal has it has what is called a sunset clause, which means that it is going to expire. The deal is not there forever. And that was a critical reason why Iran agreed to conclude this deal to begin with. It wasn't going to say, yes, we will stop all of these activities for the foreseeable future or forever. But it was willing to sign up to the deal if its term started to expire after a decade. And different components of the deal expire after a certain amount of time. So these things make it, are obviously shortcomings, but they were also necessary in order to obtain a deal to begin with. So it's not a perfect deal. It was the best one that was available to the negotiators on both sides. They had to make a number of compromises. You had seven parties at the table. So the six countries that were negotiating the deal, the EU, and of course, Iran. Being able to get all of those countries with different interests, different dynamics, to agree on a number of provisions was, of course, very difficult.
How important is it that Iran, in some ways, however it can be done, be sort of welcomed into the community of the world?
Well, that was really the key driver behind Iran coming to the table. Iran came to the table because it was the backbreaking sanctions were imposed by the United States and their international community, and it had really crippled its economy. At the same time, though, it was also very interested in overcoming the isolation that it had that it was suffering from under the Ahmadinejad presidency. And so if Iran 5 years or 10 years from now doesn't see any kind of change, doesn't believe that it has overcome that isolation, both political and economic, then it is not going to see any dividends from the deal. And then it won't have any kind of reason to really stick to the deal.
To what extent does rhetoric out of the White House change the expectations of the leadership in Iran.
Well, one thing that the rhetoric coming out of the White House does is it puts a shadow of uncertainty on the future of the nuclear deal. And certainty, or some level of certainty anyway, is really required for the nuclear deal to be implemented smoothly. That's because on the Iranian side, the expectation is that sanctions relief will lead to some sort of economic recovery, that businesses and investors will be able and willing to go into Iran. Now, there's only so much the United States can do and U.S. partners can do in helping businesses go into Iran. But certainly the rhetoric coming out of the White House, which casts a shadow of doubt surrounding the future of the deal, is not sending a signal to businesses and investors that Iran is a safe market for them to enter. So that is creating that's creating some sort of tension between Iran and the P5+1, the U.S. very specifically. And it's also sending a signal to Iran that the U.S. is not really that serious in implementing the JCPOA, the nuclear deal.
And assuming that continues, it seems that Iran would not want be willing to sign on to some other deal down the road. Is that right?
That is right. The Rouhani administration, which is a moderate administration, was pushing for what it called a JCPOA 2, so a second deal, essentially, that would bring Iran back to the table and negotiate with the West. They were not super clear on who the counterparts would be, but presumably the EU and the US would be involved. And the negotiations would be would aim to remove the remaining sanctions. So they could potentially involve the ballistic missile program or Iranian regional activities or human rights issues, all things that the United States and its partners care about when it comes to Iran. But of course, in the past few months, there has been a lot of pushback by conservatives, by hardliners, saying that the JCPOA, the nuclear deal, is already not working. So essentially, what's the point of having another round of negotiations when the first round of negotiations didn't really lead to anything? So that makes things more challenging. There's another point, though, and that is that there was a channel of communication that was created under the Obama administration between Iran and the United States. And that was fairly unique. In 3 decades since the revolution, the 1979 Islamic Revolution, there had essentially been no channel of communication between the two countries. And that was vital in de-escalating tensions. When 10 U.S. sailors entered Iranian waters and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Iran's paramilitary group, captured them, that channel of communication was vital in allowing Secretary Kerry to speak with his counterpart Javad Zarif in Iran and to get their quick and smooth release. And that is something that is critical in the Persian Gulf specifically, because you do have the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guards, and U.S. Forces that operate in very, very close proximity.
There are hardliners on both sides here. Donald Trump, campaign mode Donald Trump, could be viewed as a hardliner from the United States perspective. There are hardliners in Iran who are, I presume, wishing for a deal, this deal, to fall apart. So what does, what could we best do? What could the United States best do to undermine the hardliners on both sides?
Well, you're exactly right. You do have hardliners on both sides. And, the Trump administration is not the only hardline entity when it comes to Iran anyway in the U.S. You have a number of members of Congress who have essentially adopted for the past few decades a view that confrontation all the time, everywhere with Iran is the only solution. Yes, the Trump administration's rhetoric has been a lot more hawkish, but in some ways, its policies have not been a very drastic departure from those that were put in place before. That said, I think that the first and most important thing the United States needs to do, and it's not clear to me that that is something the Trump administration is ready or willing to do, is to clearly state its commitment to the nuclear deal. There's a number of question marks surrounding this. We know that the president doesn't like the nuclear deal. He vowed to dismantle it during the campaign and since has kind of gone back and forth on it. He said recently that Iran may not be in compliance with the nuclear deal in 90 days. On the Iranian side, things are a bit easier because even the most hardline factions within the Islamic Republic now see the nuclear deal as the law of the land. And I think that that is an opportunity for the United States. That is an opportunity because it means that regardless of what kind of U.S. action Iran takes, short of withdrawing from the deal altogether, Iran is going to be trying to comply by the deal. It's going to continue to implement the deal. The important thing is to continue to work with U.S. negotiating partners. That means the European Union, the Germans, the French, the British, and of course the Russians and the Chinese, to make sure that small crises don't turn into big ones, and to allow for the nuclear deal to continue to be implemented with some level of certainty for the next few years.
Ariane Tabatabai is author of the new Cato paper, Preserving the Iran Nuclear Deal, Perils and Prospects, available at cato.org. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.